Hi, my name is Isabel Fick. I work for Eskom as a general manager for the system operator. Over and above that, I am married to the most wonderful man in the world, and I have two beautiful sons who are now already as adults.
Women in the energy sector is not to be underestimated, nor is their contribution to multi-million dollar utilities across Africa. During this Women in Energy podcast series, we're going to be speaking with a number of leading women in Africa's power sector, showcasing their influence, the unique elements they bring to the roles, and providing a little insight into the woman behind the job title. Hi, I'm Claire Falkvein. As part of our monthly focus on women in energy, we're speaking this month to Isabel Fick, General Manager, System Operator at Eskom. Today, we're going to be talking about the importance of the system operator on the grid, opportunities for women in engineering, and gaining a bit of insight into the woman behind the title. Isabel, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. It is really great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Claire. Much appreciated. I'm looking forward to a fun conversation.
Me too. I think if our conversations previously have been anything to go by, this is definitely going to be something we should be doing over tea or perhaps even a glass of wine.
I go for the latter.
Isabel, I was wondering if perhaps you could explain to our listeners what it is that you do at Eskom, what your role entails.
I am the general manager for system operator. What that basically means is I take the accountability and the responsibility on for the management and control of the national transmission network, over and above that, as well as the national telecommunications network for Eskom. And then I also have a number of support functions reporting in, such as the grid code compliance area, where we manage the grid code secretariat for NERSA. And then, of course, some very technical things, such as the network studies, protection settings for all of the equipment, so that we know that we can protect the network as best we can at the fastest time. We also have a separate function called ancillary services, and basically what they do is they contract with large users so that if we are in a tight spot, they willingly reduce their load to assist us.
And how long have you been with Eskom? Is this the career path you anticipated taking?
That's a very interesting question. Yes, it is definitely the career path anticipated. And yes, it's definitely not quite as I anticipated. There's a little thing called reality. So life works. I have been with Eskom for 26 years now. I do have broken service for a short period in time. And during that period was around 2002 to 2003 for about 8 months. I worked for Denel, and in fact, I worked on the G6 Canon at that point in time.
So that's quite a shift from working in the power sector.
Yes and no. No, it's engineering. So it depends on what you think around shift. There's always a lot of interesting things happening, and you have to keep your mind open to new realities and learning all the time. However, yes, it is private sector by and large, although it is a state company, but you interact a lot with very different people. I was talking to international weapon manufacturers and looking at concepts as industrialization, and absolutely mind-boggling to look at the technology that's there. So for me, it was a very enriching experience. I do not regret it for a single moment. It also made me realize, and I think most importantly, that my passion lies with the power network. it lies with the wires, and that's why I came back. Sometimes we need a little bit of a shake up just to see where we belong in life and how to fulfill our purpose the best.
Yeah, I guess it's you don't know what you have until you no longer have it, isn't it?
That's true. But having said that, I must say it was a wonderful period in my life. It was exposure to something that I've never done before. It was meeting a totally different culture of people. It was being exposed to something that I must admit now, previously I thought was rather simplistic concept. But having been there and seen the absolute sophistication in the engineering that goes into a weapon like that, it is mind blowing. So for me, fabulous experience, but very happy that my career turned out as it is.
I think I have this conversation with people on a regular basis when they try and understand what it is that I find so fascinating about the power sector. You know, people kind of just think, oh, well, it's turning on a light. How hard can that be? And I think until you appreciate the enormous complexity behind that, it is very easy to perhaps discount just how fascinating this particular sector is. If I may ask, though, what is the importance of your role? I mean, I know that you've said that you work and control the transmission network. What are the implications if your team are not doing their functions correctly?
Well, let's start with, in a nutshell, what we really do is we run the economy of South Africa. It sounds maybe a little bit arrogant, and that's not the intention by any means. But any economy runs on energy, and we manage the energy for the country. So effectively, that's what we do. If my staff, for any reason, well, I won't go to saying if my staff don't do what they're supposed to do, because I've got the most wonderful staff and they are extremely dedicated. So it's not about somebody not doing their work, but there is a possibility that things can go wrong. And should that ever happen and we end up with a situation where the network goes out of control, we may then have a total blackout in the country, which of course is not something that anybody wants. And as you can imagine, that means total collapse.
Now, I mean, previously when we've spoken, we touched on the concept of the rolling blackouts, and you had a very clear position on the fact that these are an emergency measure only. Can you perhaps speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. When we do load shedding, and it really is a very extreme measure, and we are fully aware and cognizance of the implications thereof. It's not something that is done lightly, but we have to do that to protect the national network and system. I've just alluded to a total blackout, and that's why we really do it. We protect the network so that we can then protect the economy, so that we can protect the livelihoods of us, people in the country. There's just so many things that relates to this. It is something that can happen very fast, depending on the specific condition at the time on the network. But over and above it happening fast, we do everything we possibly can. We have a number of, shall we call them, protective tools in place, whereby we would first look at our large users to help us in terms of reduction. We also have some agreement with the likes of potlines that we can use. So there's a number of levers that we pull before we actually get to load shedding. We have our emergency reserves that also assist quite a lot. But when we do get to a position where we see that everything that we have on the table right now is not going to assist, then we will implement load shedding, and we do that very much to protect the network and to protect the system.
Perhaps I could shift the focus a little bit to what you do in a more general sense. And the previous conversation we had, in which we spoke around the whole concept of being a woman in engineering and the fact that you have a very strong position on that whole concept of a woman in anything. And I was wondering if you could perhaps just expand on that a little bit.
I don't believe that there's any limitations with regards to gender in terms of engineering or any other field for that matter. I was extremely fortunate that I was brought up in an environment where I honestly didn't know that there was jobs for boys and jobs for girls. Nobody taught me that. My parents never ever put me in a box, and they simply told me that you can be whatever you want to be. And I think that's something that as a society as a whole, we really need to adopt, because you can be whatever you want. If you are an engineer, fantastic. And you're female, fantastic. The only limitation I can see is that in certain areas of technical work, there may be an issue of physical strength. And I've had my fair share of trying, and I can tell you that sometimes it comes to how much humor you have to deal with something like that. And there's always a way to make a plan, you know. But the bottom line is, I don't see that gender in any way or form should be limiting any person that really wants to do something. Engineering, to be more specific, is something that, a specific career choice where we work with our brains more so than any other part of our bodies. And therefore, it's equal. There's absolutely no reason to differentiate or for any woman not to do it. The other concept that comes over, and I'm sorry if I'm talking too much now, is that you often have this notion about a woman in a man's world. My view on that is also quite strong, in that it's a choice. What we do in life is we make choices. And if you choose a career path, and specifically one like this, you know what you're in for way before you even qualify. So I really don't think that going at a later stage and saying, oh, it's so hard or it's so difficult, it's not. It's about who you are as a person and what you do. What's the choices that you make? And moreover, it's about your attitude, because attitude determines altitude. And that's something that I really live by.
I absolutely love that sentiment. Attitude determines altitude. I think that's amazing. I'm going to put that on. I'm going to put it on a t-shirt maybe, and I'll attribute it to you. We can talk.
I must just qualify. It's not my line. It is a previous, not just previous, but a mentor of mine that has actually put that concept across. And since I came across it, and this was 15 years ago, it's always been my motto. You know, there's always also a saying that says you'll take attitude above qualifications any day. And I will do that too.
Mm. Isabel, so bearing in mind what we've spoken about in terms of, and particularly your previous answer, what do you believe your role as a woman leader in a business like Eskom is?
Well, first and foremost, my role is as a leader to not only lead the people that report to me, but to build the relationships and manage. It's not just a role where there's subordinates, because there's a title called leader. Leadership, I believe, is something that comes from your heart. It's based on the relationships that you have with your peers, with the people that you report to, with the industry leaders, with your staff. And you really, as much as being in front and leading, you need to listen. And when you hear and you listen properly, then you need to act. Leadership without action really brings you nowhere. Leadership without relationships, because I believe any position and any leadership role and any management role depends on relationships, not about position. So once you have that in place and you pay attention, then you can move forward. Then you can lead the people. But other than that, you're wasting your time.
And do you think that as a woman, you have perhaps a special role or a special opportunity to help promote the opportunities for other women in the sector?
Yes, of course. You know, it amazes me that sometimes other women that are up and coming in the organization will come to you and kind of look at you in awe, if I may use the word, as if you've done the world of good. But for me, it's who I am. It's what I've done in life, you know. So sometimes it really honestly takes me by surprise. But of course we can. And I think one of the biggest, I think it's a responsibility, is to mentor other young women so that you can show them it's possible. You know, it's not a fluke of nature. It really is hard work. It's dedication. It's building those relationships. Women are naturally, in my view, and I think there's a bit of research behind that as well, more inclined to have emotional intelligence or develop the skill. I can tell you from my personal experience, it's something that I had to work at very, very hard. It surely didn't come this naturally to me in the beginning. But I realized that if you don't have that, and I'm not talking about softer skills in general. I am specifically talking about emotional intelligence, about understanding yourself before you understand others, but then also being able to put yourself in other shoes. You really cannot move. And I think that is a serious advantage for women specifically. Of course, it's not something to be misused, because that is also very possible to do. But you have to be very cognizant of it.
So if I were to ask you, what is the message that you would like to share with other young women that are out there who are wanting to get into engineering or into the power sector per se? I mean, what would you like to say to them?
Go girl, go get it. Do not limit yourself in any way or form. Never, ever put yourself in a box and never allow anyone else to do it for you. It's all up to you and it's all up to your own attitude.
I like that. I think that having had parents who, as you said, never allowed you to kind of consider the fact that there was a job for girls or a job for boys, has definitely stood you in good stead. And perhaps there's a lesson in there for some of the parents that are listening as well, in that we also help create and define the gender roles our children take with them. So, you know, if we stop seeing girls' jobs and boys' jobs, they will as well. Isabel, I wanted to touch on something else, which I know as a woman is particularly challenging, and that is the concept of work-life balance. And I know, for instance, I mean, your job has required you to work a lot of after hours, travel a lot. How have you managed that particular part of your life?
I think we need to start off by saying that the concept of work-life balance is not straightforward. It's not something that you can define and put in a diary and it's just going to work out because you will it to be, or because you take decisions. Having said that, I think the key to work-life balance is, in fact, that is, you need to take control. You need to take decisions. It's not always going to work out the way you want it. There are going to be times that you are going to compromise your family time, or to be straight and honest, even compromise some of the milestones in your children's growing up years. Certainly with me, I missed a few of those, having not been at home at the time. However, having said that, I was extremely fortunate. My husband enabled me, and he, as I told you before, I believe I'm married to the most wonderful man in the world. And he's always been a big support. And that's something that I would really recommend, that when you make your choices as far as your partner is concerned, to consider a partner that will support you no matter what. In my case, where I couldn't reach, he did. So our children were not compromised as they were growing up. They knew that there were different responsibilities. And again, this comes to no jobs for men and jobs for women. We would fill one another's areas so that we could provide the best support for our children. And you make compromises. You make compromises in your time. One of the things that I try and live by is that I do not work over a weekend, unless, of course, there's something that I absolutely have to do. And it's much easier said than done. And it takes a lot of discipline and it takes a lot of decision making. But you need to set the boundaries. You need to take time with your family and with your children and your husband. These days, my children have left home, so it's just me and my hubby. And in a certain sense, it may be easier to compromise. However, I deliberately do not, because they deserve our time just as much as any job does. And in the end, we're all going to stop working at some point. And who's going to be there? And what's the relationship going to be like when you get to that point? You have to pay attention and look after your loved ones. It's not easy. It can be done. And sometimes it's going to take compromise to either way. It's just life.
Yeah, it's really easy for your job to become all-consuming and for you to believe that your family will be there regardless. But yeah, relationships, all kinds of relationships, take time and effort, don't they? And you can't just assume that because they're your family, that and because they have to love you, that they have to stick around, after the growing up is done.
You're so right, but it's not only an issue of after the growing up. I'll give you two examples. One, a good number of years ago, when I was studying for my MBA. Now, maybe it was also a bit of ignorance on my side because I was really taking a stance on this one. Everybody told me it's a divorce degree. So you can imagine there's just no way I said that's not going to happen. But what I did and to try and guide the family through it, because it is very difficult to work full time and study. What I basically spend a normal evening with my children and my husband. And when the kids go to bed, I did too. And it was rather early in the evening. And then I would get up at 2 or 3 in the morning and I'd study. And I did that specifically so that I did not disrupt their normal day, so that they didn't have to make the compromises. There were times, as in all other situations, that I had to work through the night if there was assignments due or during exam times. But by and large, I was able to control the home life in such a manner that it wasn't a major thing for the family. So that's just one example of, and yeah, maybe I should qualify by saying I'm definitely not a morning person. So it really wasn't the cool breeze for me, And then the second example is my current position, given that it's got such a lot of responsibility and accountability, and of course it takes quite a bit of time and dedication. So before I considered applying for it, I involved my whole family and made sure that they, whole family meaning my husband and my children, so that they understood exactly what I was getting into and what it would take. And we agreed as a family, if I didn't do that, or if they didn't agree, I would have had a really hard time to actually apply. You have to do what you love. You're going to do it for the rest of your life. I've often heard people that are unhappy in their jobs, and I have the world of sympathy for them, but I honestly cannot say that I understand. Because I do what I love. I do what my passion is. And that's the best place to make any decisions from.
Maybe it's because too many of us aren't aware of what our passions actually are. Can I ask, who is your inspiration?
Oh, that is very easy. I'm not going to give you some fabulous figure or name there. First, from a woman perspective, my mom. She gave up so many things in order to make me prosper. I never knew that at the time. She was just my mom. Then she got ill. She had cancer, and she suffered from it for a number of years before she passed on. But I have, until today, the world of respect for the legacy that she has given me, and that's living in me because of her. Years later, I found out that there were times that they hardly had food to enable me to go forward with my studies. But I didn't know at the time. And I will always appreciate that. But overall, if we talk about inspiration, I find my inspiration on the people I meet, everyone I encounter with, everyone that goes across your path has got some story to tell. My mom used to say everyone has his own or her own war story. But it's not about that. It's about who they are. And I take inspiration from who everyone around me is. And I don't mean it lightly, and I don't mean it in general. You come across the most unexpected individuals, irrespective of where you run into them. That's my inspiration. Yes, there are leaders that you can look up to, and I do. But I don't see them as any different from anyone else. It's just a person that's fulfilling their purpose. And in doing so, they inspire others. And so can any one of us.
I like that. And something a little bit more general, and I guess hopefully a little bit fun, is what book are you reading? And are you taking any lessons from it, or are you actually just reading because it's a way to get some downtime?
Sorry for laughing, but in my view, reading is fun. It's a lot of fun. I don't read just any particular book in general. Because I love reading and I love learning, I came across let's call it a newsletter. It's called Trade Pub. And it basically means that every Monday morning, I end up with 5 new books in my inbox. And that's fantastic. And it's around all kind of topics, mostly business and leadership. I value books in the sense that I don't have a book. I have a library of books, and I have a library of ebooks. What makes it very nice is a lot of these are easy, short reads, and I'm talking an hour, 2 hours tops. What I do is I use them and I send them to my direct reports. I send them to the people that I mentor as inspiration, or whenever I know there's something in terms of personal development. So for fun, I read, and you're going to love this, I think, really soppy, silly romance novels that on page 2, you know who's going to get who, but it's great fun reading them anyway. So that's really if I just want to relax. And from an inspirational perspective, a book that I really find, and it's maybe a bit more serious than you intended. It's called God is My CEO by Larry Julian. And it comes down to a concept which may sound a bit foreign, but it's about creating a personal business plan as opposed to a business plan. And how you as an individual would live by godly principles and in so fulfill your role in terms of whichever position you have in leadership.
Mm. I always look at the books that Bill Gates is reading. He goes through, I believe it's 10 books a week, which I find quite astonishing. I don't know where he finds the time to do it. But
No, I just think you have to make time.
Yeah. You know, I think too much of my evenings at the moment are being sucked up by watching videos on Instagram. And I'm not feeding my brain with the kinds of things that kind of give me joy. I love history books and I love biographies. I always think that there's so many interesting stories out there. As you said, everybody has a story, and I like hearing what other people's stories are. Last question for you is, Bill, because I know that you have no doubt got a really busy day ahead. I'm sure every day is a busy day, but if I could just ask, what message would you like the people listening to this podcast to take away with them?
That you have to live for your passion. Do what you love and do it every day to the best of your ability. And whether you're male or female, you should not limit yourself based on gender. You should do whatever you want to do.
Well, I certainly can't think of a better way to end off this discussion. Isabel Fick, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today, for sharing some of your stories and your insights. And thank you for some very inspirational messaging as well.
Thank you, Claire. It was my big pleasure. It's always good to be able to share with others.
Well, I look forward to having the opportunity to chat with you again. And from us here at the Inland Africa podcast, thank you so much for joining us. What book are you reading? And are you taking any lessons from it? Or are you actually just reading because it's a way to get some downtime?
Sorry for laughing. But in my view, reading is fun. It's a lot of fun. So I don't read just any particular book in general. Because I love reading and I love learning, I came across a, let's call it a newsletter. It's called Trade Pub. And it basically means that every Monday morning, I end up with 5 new books in my inbox. And that's fantastic. And it's around all kind of topics, mostly business and leadership. I value books in the sense that I don't have a book. I have a library of books and I have a library of ebooks. What makes it very nice is a lot of these are easy, short reads. And I'm talking an hour, 2 hours tops. What I do is I use them and I send them to my direct reports. I send them to the people that I mentor as inspiration or whenever I know there's something in terms of personal development. So for fun, I read, and you're going to love this, I think, really soppy, silly romance novels that on page 2, you know who's going to get who, but it's great fun reading them anyway. So that's really if I just want to relax, and from an inspirational perspective, a book that I really find, and it's maybe a bit more serious than you intended. It's called God is My CEO by Larry Julian. And it comes down to a concept which may sound a bit foreign, but it's about creating a personal business plan as opposed to a business plan, and how you as an individual would live by godly principles, and in so fulfill your role in terms of whichever position you have in leadership.
I always find I always look at the books that Bill Gates is reading. He goes through, I believe it's 10 books a week, which I find quite astonishing. I don't know where he finds the time to do it.
No, I just think you have to make time.
Yeah. You know, I think too much of my evenings at the moment are being sucked up by watching videos on Instagram, and I'm not feeding my brain with the kinds of things that kind of give me joy. I love history books and I love biographies. I always think that there's so many interesting stories out there. As you said, everybody has a story, and I like hearing what other people's stories are. But it's just so easy to get sucked into that rabbit hole, which is social media. Every single book that you pick up has got the potential to really just expand your mind.
I support and agree with that. We need to keep on learning, no?
Absolutely, every day. Last question for you as well, because I know that you have no doubt got a really busy day ahead. I'm sure every day is a busy day, but if I could just ask, what message would you like the people listening to this podcast to take away with them?
That you have to live for your passion. Do what you love and do it every day to the best of your ability. And whether you're male or female, you should not limit yourself based on gender. You should do whatever you want to do.
Well, I certainly can't think of a better way to end off this discussion. Isabel Fick, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today, for sharing some of your stories and your insights, and thank you for some very inspirational messaging as well.
Thank you, Claire. It was my big pleasure. It's always good to be able to share with others.
Well, I look forward to having the opportunity to chat with you again.
Thank you for joining us on this Enlit Africa podcast. This episode is brought to you in partnership with ESI Africa. For more podcasts, you can visit the Enlit Africa website at enlit-africa.com or visit the ESI Africa website, esi-africa.com. Be sure to tune in again for more conversations and insights into the things that really matter to Africa's energy industry. Until next time, I'm Claire Falkveen, and you've been listening to the Women in Energy podcast.